If it weren't for students, we all wouldn't have jobs. We wouldn't be able to do what we do. So realize the student is the customer. The student is making the investment here. That's what makes the wheels go around on most campuses.
Welcome to Biblical Higher Ed Talk, where we tap into the wisdom of leaders and practitioners of biblical higher education for the advancement of colleges and universities teaching the way of Christ in the modern world. Each week, we'll tackle topics around leading your organization, expanding your impact in the world, and deepening your faith through Christ-centered conversations. Ready to make a difference in the lives of your faculty, staff, and students? Then let's begin our journey.
Today on Biblical Higher Ed Talk, I sit down with Nathan Alexander, Vice President for Partner Relations at Clark Higher Ed, to discuss the ever-changing landscape of recruitment and enrollment processes. What's working well in the highly competitive world of higher education? Thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Philip Dearborn, President of ABHE. And we are honored to have as our guest this week, Nathan Alexander. Nathan serves as a Vice President for Partner Relations at Clark Higher Ed, an enrollment and marketing company. And if you've been around ABHE, you've probably seen them in the exhibit hall, or you've seen Nathan present before in the past. But basically, what they do is help institutions tell their story. And I've invited Nathan to discuss effective recruitment and enrollment processes in a very highly complex and competitive world of higher education. That's not a shock to anybody. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Philip. I appreciate that. It's good. I'm happy to be here and excited to join you today.
Great. So we're going to get into some of the enrollment related questions here in a moment. And those of you who are listeners know I like to ask all of our guests kind of an opening question just so that folks can get to know you a little bit. And so share with us a defining moment, Nathan, that God used somewhere in your life to propel you forward to where you are today.
Yeah. You know, I look back and I've been in higher ed most of my working career. You know, started in admissions just after I finished final exams at Christmas of December of 1991. So I jumped in with both feet and got to experience lots of great things. But working with a Christian institution and going to a Christian institution was just an impactful thing for me. But I tell you, you know, the relationships you make along the way were just extraordinary. I can remember one quick story, a gentleman named Clayton King. He speaks to a lot of youth and, you know, he's just a dynamic young man or gentleman now. I remember him as a student coming to Gardner Webb, and he was just on fire for God, and really wanted to tell others about God and how it worked through his life. And, you know, he made an impact on my life. I got to work with him and his family as they came to the institution. I got to see him graduate. I got to see him go his career. And I got to think about my one little part that he got to influence me and I got to influence him and help him get somewhere. And I think about that every day as we do our work, as we help Christian institutions work and tell their story better. We get just a little part of maybe sowing a seed or opening a student or a family's eye to what a Christian institution might be and what the impact it makes. So that's the, I guess, working with Clayton many years ago was an impactful thing. Every day we get to think about how we can help schools. And I love that. And that's just what drives my passion to help more schools to get better enrollment and tell their story better.
Great. Such a privilege we have, right? And that's at the heart. There's a lot of science behind what we do in higher education and systems and processes. But at the end of the day, it's the students. We're setting up an environment for those interactions to happen so that they can engage and realize who they are, how they've been created in Christ, and what God has for them. And to be a part of that, what a privilege.
It is. It is truly is. And I'm grateful for that each day. And I have to kind of pinch myself and go, remember why you're doing this. This is truly not just making widgets. I mean, we are really impacting, can impact people's lives for the greater good.
Yeah. So you've been in the higher ed industry, specifically the recruitment world, admissions world, marketing world for, like you said, most of your professional career. You've seen some things come and go, and I would say it's dramatically changed over the last several years. If you were to consolidate it down, what would you say are the top three changes that you've observed most recently?
I can remember days when we first started enrollment and we would see, you know, colleges show up to college fairs with just one brochure and a catalog and just a few inquiry cards. Now we see them show up with iPads and, you know, students pulling their phone out and clicking QR codes and, you know, or scanning and all this kind of specific stuff. But the biggest thing is the personal approach to recruitment and how we build relationships has just dramatically increased. The private colleges and universities, our small schools that were just niche oriented, really did a great job of that years ago. Well, now the publics and our competition have just raised their game. And I mean, they've got, you know, huge budgets and big teams, and they're building these lavish welcome centers. And really, so it's making us, you know, our smaller schools and our Christian institutions having to run faster, bark louder, really define who they are. The other big thing, another big thing was, you know, a few years ago, there were some sweeping changes about how recruitment was affected. And I think there was some legislation, there were some things. And it really kind of, what I said, it made things no holds barred. And really some of the ethics and the things around young people when they commit to an institution, it allowed other institutions to come in on the back door and maybe offer more aid or, you know, start recruiting them when they were at that institution again. Just some things that I just kind of like, well, really? Come on. Let's, you know, those kinds of things, those scrupulous, kind of unscrupulous practices have kind of really brought and us people, as colleges have really, you know, had challenged to get their enrollment, they've gotten more and more aggressive. And sometimes they're taking some measures that, you know, that just aren't the greatest. Another thing is the test optional and direct admission. You know, test optional, that was sort of our testing thing, was sort of our platform of how we could measure. Nowadays, there's grade inflation going on and the tests, people are not taking tests like they were, unless you're at a selective institution, very selective. And I've, in my career, I've worked pretty not predominantly with second and third choice institutions. It's just who we are. Now I've worked with a few of our premier selective institutions, but the test optional and the direct admission that's really come onto the playing field are changing the game. And I'm not sure exactly where that's going. I mean, it is truly what I want to think about for a student. It's a buyer's market because, you know, a lot of those hurdles that students that weren't really prepared for college or just didn't get it done in the undergrad, they didn't always get over those hurdles. And maybe they weren't cut out for college. Well, now all those are gone. And a lot of them are gone. So it just challenges our small schools to be distinctive and to be able to set themselves apart and tell their story about what, you know, makes them special, much more important, you know, throughout, but all three of those things.
Yeah. That's great. And it is amazing when you see the broad spectrum of higher education. We are guilty by association, right? Because we're in the industry, yet and it's interesting you brought up the morality issue of the recruitment practices. Obviously at our institutions, we would draw a hard line, yet our competition is engaged in practices. And like you said, a lot of our schools tend to be second, third choice schools. So the competition increases because of some of the practices, yet those are some lines that our institutions aren't going to cross in the process.
Right, right. And we just have to look at ways going forward. You know, how do we work with those? How do we make sure that we're contacting students, we're doing the things right, we're paying attention to our checks and balances and those kinds of things? And maybe we'll talk some more about that later, but it just, you have to be on your A game.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth Godin, who writes a lot on marketing, will often talk about we're caught in this rat race to the bottom. That's really what has happened. within higher education, because we do have families who are looking at the cost, and they have several options, and they play the bid, and they go to one school and say, hey, this is my package, what can you do? And this is, well, this is what we can do. And then they take that back to school A and say, hey, can you beat this? And we're just caught in this ever-ending cycle that really is leading to the bottom. And I think we've got to have an approach that flips that conversation, where we're actually talking about the value we provide to it through our educational experiences on our campuses.
You know, you got to talk about the value. And we have to get these families to think about, it's not all about the cost. It's about how well I do at that institution, how I thrive, how I grow, how I can grow spiritually, how I can grow academically, how I can grow as an individual. And, you know, it's hard to put a value on that. But, you know, the most important thing I used to tell families every day was, you better go to the place that you can be happy so that you're successful. Because if you go someplace just based on cost, you're going to get to the end and maybe you don't do as well. You know, you're there and you're like, you know, because if I'm not happy somewhere, then what good is it?
Yeah. And you also mentioned the test optional thing, and I can't imagine for admissions offices, because they're looking for, ultimately what they're doing is looking for mission fit students. There are markers, quantifiable markers that traditionally have been used in the past to gauge the academic side of it. And if you're in a test optional environment where, great if you do take the SATs or ACTs, but they're not necessarily going to be required for admission. Grade inflation at the high school level. Kids with GPAs of 6, 7, 8, like how in the world did you get that high of a GPA? And it becomes more difficult, at least on the academic side, to gauge, is this a mission fit student for our institution?
It just challenges our institutions on the recruitment side to make sure they get to know the prospect and the applicant, and they build a relationship, and they look for the, what I call fit factors, you know, make sure they fit missionally, make sure that they are, you know, on board with what they want to study, you know, that there's all those factors that come into it, you know, and it's just what I go back to. It goes back to intentional recruitment. I have to be very intentional about how I recruit, you know, the conversations that we have, making sure that we help the families. And sometimes students are not a good fit for institutions, and being able to step back and say, okay, hey, you know, make sure you understand who we are, what we're about, what our experience is like, and what our culture's like. Sometimes families, you know, you've got to help them down those paths.
Yeah. The admissions offices hold in tension the transactional elements. There's a process that's involved, right? And in order to be enrolled or admitted to the institution, you've got to, you know, fill out these paperwork, this reference form. You got to do this, check. So there's definitely a transactional approach to the admissions process, but then there's also the personal touch side of it. And I think those are kind of held in tension. And if you go one way or the other, perhaps it's not necessarily a good practice. So what are some key principles our listeners need to hear to keep those two elements in check, the transactional side and the personal touch side?
Well, you know, I was in a conversation with one of my colleagues not long ago who just finished his dissertation. We were talking about the transaction. We were talking about the transformation. And that's a buzzword in higher ed right now, transformation. How do we transform? But, you know, and I took that a little bit further. I was like, you know, how do we take the transactional and turn it into the transformational? And I think there's a couple of ways. And oh, my goodness, we could talk about this for hours. But we've got to look at the admissions process. You know, we have to look at those things and put ourselves through it. How many times do we just set up our admissions process and we forget about it? It works. Okay. If it's not broke, why do we fix it? Whoa. We have to look at those things. You know, we have to ask ourselves, why are we making students jump through this hurdle or that or this hula hoop or whatever? Is it truly needed? Because your competitor down the street is continually streamlining their processes and their approach to make it easier on them. They get them through it quicker. And so many families want that drive-through mentality of, hey, I want it now. I want it the way I want it. And I need it quick. I need it easy. Well, we made it tough on people years ago to get through the process. And it's sort of our own being. So we've got to look at those processes. And we have to ask ourselves, why? Why are we doing this? This is just because somebody said we had to do it internally. Oh, because it made their job easier? We got to look at that.
Biblical Higher Ed Talk is sponsored by ABHE, the Association for Biblical Higher Education. At ABHE, bringing the love and light of Christ to the world is reflected in our drive to see our member institutions flourish, leading them to a time of success for their institution and giving them the tools and insights they need to look toward the future. Interested in learning more about membership with ABHE? Visit us at abhe.org or send us an email to membership@abhe.org. ABHE is your partner committed to advancing biblical higher education for kingdom impact. Now, back to the show.
It's interesting on that point, and it is so incredibly true. It's true with our websites. It's true with our processes. And for some reason, when admissions people are conducting regular, if they're trying to fly somewhere, if they're trying to conduct business on the internet,
right,
if they can't get to what they need within one or two clicks, what do? We give up on it, right? I'm not going to go with that company. It's hidden. I can't find it. It's too cumbersome of a process. But yet when it comes to our admissions processes, why aren't we thinking the same way? And the public is that way, right or wrong. It's the reality. Right. That's how they are. So if they go to your website and they're looking for specific information, or they're looking for how do I apply or what are the steps to apply, and it's this convoluted process that you've got to submit this or check this, and then they give up.
Exactly. And, you know, with so many students that are just sitting up here on the fringes looking in and doing all the research before they raise their hand, you never get the shot to have a relationship with that student and talk with them and build and tell your story out, a personal story, be able to have interactions and create engagement and stickiness with that family, because they're stealth and they took themselves out. Very good. Yeah. The next one I would say is communication flows and enrollment plans. Okay. You know, I can encourage folks to look at their comm flows, go back to their enrollment plans, look at how you can personalize. This day and age, people want interactions. Yes, we all stand behind phones all the time and computers and like to do email, but we also want some interactions, and we have to push that. That's where the personal side comes through. That's where the transformation can come through on that personal thing. And you've got to be intentional on how you find those places and be super specific, because school down the street is working them through a process. How are you different?
One of the best tools would be, you know, having a CRM.
And one that's built out.
Right. And that's even for our small schools, the price points for CRMs have come down significantly. And, you know, there are even some of the big companies that have products for the nonprofit sector that you can engage. But that's your competitions are using very sophisticated CRMs. There's no way you can keep track of all of the touch points on spreadsheets.
Exactly. And I can't say that. I can't hit the drum hard enough on that. I tell you, a CRM can make or break you. I see so many campuses implementing CRMs and only doing it half-baked. You know, they don't have the budget to bring somebody in to help them fully set the thing up. They don't keep up with it. They're not training. They're not staying up with the latest additions that come out. And it's just like, oh my goodness, you know, we're tripping over our own toe and falling down. That's huge. The next one I would think, and this is my last one on those, the tensions, is that we have to have the student first approach and student first and then an enrollment first. Think about enrollment first. How many times do we get on campuses and people go, oh, well, admissions didn't make it this year. They didn't get their number. And this is staff, this is faculty. They're like, but I go back to them and go, hey, you know, if it weren't for students, we all wouldn't have jobs. You know, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So realize the student is the customer. The student is making the investment here. That's what makes the wheels go around on most campuses, most all campuses. There are a few that live off their endowments and, you know, development, all that stuff. But really, the student, you know, and people need to get to take a step back and realize that. But it takes the village, takes change, and a lot of times culture, And that usually starts from the top down and, you know, getting that kind of thing changed.
Yeah. And I think in higher ed, we've resisted the word customer. And I think it's something that we need to, there are aspects of, I get it. I understand why it's not, we don't like using the term customer.
Right.
But at the end of the day, these are people buying a product that's a six-figure product in a lot of realities. I think it's okay to call them customers and realize that, hey, you know what? I think where it comes from is, you know, this mentality of the customer's always right. We have to bend to them, whatever they want, they get. And that's not the case. But I think there's a give and take there that we can say, look, that they're the priority. Our mission exists so that student is educated in order to accomplish X.
Right. I always like to change that. You know, people talk about it being a cost, it be a product, it be whatever. I always say it's an experience, because in its experience that you get to be educated, you get to learn from others, you get to go places, you get to do things, you get to immerse yourself into things, you get to, you know, that's what I'm saying. That whole experience, they're investing in their success is the way I look at it, and they're investing in their future.
Yeah.
Whatever that might be.
So you've been in higher ed a long time. You've been on college campuses without disclosing who and where. What are two or three mistakes that you've seen college admissions offices make?
We could come up with a pretty big laundry list of this, but I think I can condense it down to, let's say, three. One is not having a comprehensive, measurable recruitment plan. Two is not measuring or using KPIs to get better. You know, your key performance indicator. And number three, you mentioned it earlier, is not having a CRM that is fully implemented, that is working throughout the funnel from prospect to inquiry all the way through enrollment. Because just because you enroll the student doesn't mean you're going to keep them. You have to retain them. But not having that comprehensive plan, you can't. How do we get somewhere without a roadmap? And I don't understand it. We have so many schools that are just flying by the seat of their pants. They're like, okay, I know I got to have 250 this year, but they don't have a clue how they're going to get there. And they don't know where they are along the way. So they're not measuring, and they're not measuring people. They're sometimes not, you know, having their recruiters be accountable for their work. And we have to do that. We have to know that, because if we don't, we'll never get there. And then we have to have the system to keep up with all that. And that's that CRM. I just see that so much, and it's broke. It hurts me. It hurts me when I get on campuses and I see those guys. Things I'm like,
And a lot of times the admissions counselors or those that are on the front lines are 22, 23 year olds, new graduates of the institution. They love the place. They've maybe as a student worker have given tours on campus. But you got to realize what you're working with from an accountability perspective. There's a lot of fire and a lot of energy there, but are you holding them accountable to meet certain metrics along the way?
And are you training them? You know, I can remember, you know, counselors coming to work when I was sitting in the seat, you know, and starting out, and they would hand them, you know, their briefcase and their keys and their car and say, hey, take off. We got college fairs. And they would show them how to set up a table and they turned them loose. And I was like, today's times, you just can't do that. You have to do training. You have to be constantly training on things.
And the KPIs are so critical too, because that becomes measures along the way in the recruitment cycle. So because our numbers are so important, and numbers do equate to revenue to the budget versus expense, exactly, for the leadership team to be able to know along the way, kind of what's the, no guarantees. I mean, we've seen that, but if we have well-established KPIs that have been formed over a long period of time, the averages end up working out so that you can have a pretty good sense. Okay, here we are in November, here we are in December, January. This is kind of what things are looking like as we anticipate the incoming class. And that way you avoid the shock of, well, we're 200 and we needed 250 to hit budget.
Good enrollment managers, you know, they're coming out of the gate and they should know, you know, how they're pacing. You know, they should know how many inquiries and what their yields are and where they need to be and what these conversions should pan out in the end. That's critical. Yes, we don't have a crystal ball. I wish we did. I used to tell my president all the time, it's like, are we going to get our 600? I'd be like, you know, the factors say that we should, our conversions say that we should, But there's so many things that affect that funnel. You know, you've got lots of different things. And we're going crazy right now, Philip, with the whole financial aid and the Department of Ed. Oh, if you've watched that blow up in the last few weeks, I mean, good gracious, that is just changing how everybody's scrambling right now. And we've got, you know, how do we tell that story? How, you know, you got to be out ahead of those things. And we have students trying to make decisions. So yeah, that's a whole other podcast in itself, though.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned the CRM piece again. And one of the things that I've seen too is admissions offices who traditionally every admissions office kind of knows, okay, we've got that student. Like they, wherever that is in the process. And a lot of times it was around, they've submitted the non-refundable deposit, right? Okay, they're in. And then we don't touch them again and expect them to show up in late August, right? This, your CRM has to engage them. You still have to recruit them after those points.
Oh, there has to be engagements all along the point. You know, you need to have them to campus. You need to have, you know, you need to continually create stickiness. And what I mean by that is I want to get them registered for a class. I want to get them back to look at their residence hall. I want to make sure that they have signed up for orientation. I want to make sure they have this, you know, set up stuff with the bursar's office or business office to make payments, whatever, so that we're making that gradual pull. They already get their ID, all those kinds of things. Right. Get roommates if that's the situation that they're in.
Yeah. And it's really, I like how you did that. You essentially break down all of the different touch points into little bits, and you stretch that out over, and then those are your touches along the way. And then you throw in, you know, into your CRM, a personal note from their advisor, you know, that they're just getting a handwritten note from the advisor. If you set it up in the CRM system wise, it's super easy. The advisor just knows that I've got to write a note to Joe and to Jan, and here we go.
Or you do it like this, Philip. You actually have those notes written, and you run them over to that faculty member and say, "Hey, sign this and put a little quick note." You do it for them. All that can be programmed and automated. It's critical today's times.
The enrollment cliff. Yeah. If I could play dramatic music, I'd play it right now. We've been talking about this thing. 2025 is right around the corner. That's when it was anticipated for us to all fall off the cliff. So talk to us. Is it all hype? Is it real? Is it fake? How's it really going to impact us?
It is real. When you look at birth rates, you look at high school graduates, you pull the maps across the country, it is real. We're already seeing some of that, you know, in the Northeast, you know, where just the numbers aren't, we got schools where the numbers aren't there. Even in the Midwest and places, I think it's really going to push our schools to, the pool is getting smaller, and even this pool is even smaller. When we think about Christian higher ed, we continually decrease the size of the pool from what it was 15 years ago or even 10 years ago. And it just challenges us to make sure we're on our A game and we're pushing the envelope and we're super intentional with what we're doing. Yes, it is real. I do think it's going to play some more impact. And unfortunately, I think this enrollment cliff and the pressures that we're facing right now in our economy, as well as in our legislature and Department of Ed, and a lot of different factors are going to, unfortunately, it's going to push some more schools out of business. And I hate that. And because there's a lot of schools that are really shining the light bright, and there's some that their flashlights are getting dim.
And Nathan, I've seen a number of schools, because we've known this because of statistics from the government that this cliff was coming, and you saw immediately colleges pivot and do some of the things that we talked about earlier in anticipation of this, because the pool, it's already competitive, and the pool is going to now get smaller. So if we thought it was competitive before, it's really going to get competitive. So they do have the systems in place to be able to adjust. And the other thing, and this is part of your admissions plan, and it refers to some of our previous conversation of, there's no single source of students. Rare is the institution that they get all of their students from one particular source. It's tiny little streams. It's four students here, three students there, seven students
exactly.
here. And that's the kind of science that we need to be talking about and be okay with a source that provides three students. But that 3 and 5 and 7 and 9 and 12 adds up over time to your incoming class.
Well, and I'll take that a step further, Philip. It is crucial that our campuses take their CRMs. Yes, this is a first source. This student came from a college referral. This student came from a referral. It is important that we keep up with first choice of first source, second source, third source, because we don't know which one had the influence on this normally. And students will, you know, raise their hand over here. They might raise their hand over here and over here. So we have to keep up with those things to measure those. Again, go because a lot of those sources cost us money. So we need to know what the ROI is on that.
Yeah, because that's exactly right. Because you're investing dollars in a particular source and name buys or pay-per-click. There's a place for it.
Oh,
I've seen
yeah.
colleges spend serious amounts of money and their return on investment is so incredibly low. And they've blown through $10,000 in pay-per-clicks.
Yeah, and that is it's a challenging market, and there's a time and a place for pay per click as well as digital advertising, as you know, boots on the street. Again, it's all part of a strategy. You have to measure it to be able to manage it.
And at the end of the day, block and tackle, right?
It's exactly basic blocking and tackling, and that's sometimes where we see our schools fall up. I'm like, guys, this is basic blocking and tackling. We've got into probably the 301 recruitment here today level, of course, but a lot of our colleges just need to be doing the 101 of basic blocking and tackling recruitment admissions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nathan, we've got 1 minute left, so it's almost an unfair question. Let's hear your opinion on it. We're seeing AI all over the place. It's being leveraged all over the place. How are you seeing it being leveraged in recruitment and enrollment processes?
Well, first and foremost, get ready. It's coming. No, with no ifs, ands, or buts. But first and foremost, your data's got to be good. It builds on data. It's a machine learning. It can be great for predicting enrollment and predicting lots of factors. And it also can help with communication plans and all that stuff. But you still got to put the human touch in it. Okay. There's a lot of factors. We could do a whole podcast on AI and talk about that and do it. But those are the three big factors: data. You've got to know how to predict. You still have to be intentional, and you know, you can use it with comp plans, but again, it's got to be real and authentic.
Yep. So well said. And I'm seeing companies that are creating AI bots that sit on your data system.
Right.
And makes predictions off of it. So it's kind of the Wild West right now. You're just seeing all kinds of things popping up.
You're exactly right. And I've seen schools using AI to award dollars, to look at where to put money, who to send postcards to, who to communicate with, all based on AI. It's something to contend with, but you got to be ready for it. And a lot of campuses are just challenged with data.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for your time today. This was a fantastic conversation, and I think we could have gone on for another episode, but very helpful information. And if you would like to reach out to Nathan, Nathan was kind enough to share his email address, and we will put that in the show description. If you would like to reach out to Nathan and have a further conversation about anything that we talked about today. So until next time, stay Kingdom focused.
Thanks for listening to Biblical Higher Ed Talk. For more, follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. We're delighted that you chose to spend a part of your day with us and encourage you to reach out to us with feedback, topics, or guests for the show. You can get in touch with Philip, your host, via LinkedIn or at biblicalhigheredtalk@abhe.org. Biblical Higher Ed Talk is a production of the Association for Biblical Higher Education in association with Westport Studios. Views expressed on this show are those of the participants and may not reflect the views of ABHE or Westport Studios. Bring light and life to your biblical higher educational organization by inquiring about membership with ABHE at abhe.org. We'll catch you next time.